This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of June 19th, 2022. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 243. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. The Is It Just Me commentary. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And the big deal feature. The final report of the Cullen Commission on Money Laundering in BC. 3 years and $15 million later, was it worth it? Why was no one held accountable? Should it have lasted another year? Hear from guests Peter German and Cash Heed. But first, is it just me? Is it just me, or are you tired of politicians saying one thing and doing another? When the Cullen Commission final report was published June 15th, Attorney General David Eby praised the media for its role in exposing the dark underbelly of BC's casino industry under the BC Liberal government. I called him on it. Here is how it went.
At this point, I would like to explicitly recognize the important role of members of the media in uncovering this issue for years before my time in the role as minister responsible for gaming, and for years after, including during the pendency of this commission of inquiry. Many reporters also worked with and were supported by interested citizen advocates who should also be recognized. This number of dedicated reporters, both current and retired, you and I both know who you are, have spent extended amounts of time pulling at the threads that were available on the issue of money laundering, trying to get a sense for the public of the scope of the problem, and trying to ensure accountability and reform without any of the tools the inquiry had to demand records, compel testimony, and investigate. Despite that, you exposed much of what was confirmed by the Commission's work. Without your efforts, I do not believe that this inquiry would have taken place. It was called in response to widespread public concern about this issue, and your work contributed to public education.
Yes, both Commissioner Cullen and you made special note of the important role of the media in shining a light on money laundering. That's a nice sentiment, and we all feel good to hear those words, but your words don't really match your actions. It's right here in Hansard, November 25th of 2021, you voted for Bill 22, which watered down the Freedom of Information Law and allowed the NDP to charge a $10 tax on FOI requests. Will you consider excusing reporters from paying the $10 FOI application fee?
There are some really specific recommendations from the commissioner around public access to various databases that assist in uncovering and identifying money laundering. Those recommendations will be looked at by government. In terms of the specific FOI issue, my colleague Lisa Baer has presented extensive information about why government took those steps, including the remarkable escalation in cost to the public of processing FOI requests. And that is not canvassed by the commissioner or the commissioner's recommendations.
What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. This is the big deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast.
Money laundering is fundamentally destabilizing to the society and the economy that we all want for the province. It allows criminals and bad actors to exploit the very things that we value: stability, sound financial and professional institutions, and personal privacy. Sophisticated money launderers have used British Columbia as a clearinghouse or a terminus for laundering an astounding amount of dirty money. Even though we cannot accurately put a dollar figure on the volume of money laundering that takes place, I conclude in my report that it is a vast amount. While much of this activity has occurred covertly in the shadows, some has happened in plain sight.
That is the voice of Justice Austin Cullen, the Commissioner of British Columbia's Public Inquiry into Money Laundering. the Cullen Commission's final report was published June 15th. It's 1,800 pages and contains 101 recommendations, the product of a three-year process that included public hearings. It's heavy on casinos, 538 pages about the gaming sector to be exact. It was inconclusive on the role of money laundering or foreign cash leading to higher real estate prices. Cullen also ruled that BC Liberal politicians were not corrupt, including ex-Premier Christy Clark and ex-Deputy Premier Rich Coleman. He said they just didn't do their job. It's a surprising conclusion to those who wanted accountability. Casino companies plowed hundreds of thousands of dollars into the BC Liberals, keeping them in power for 16 years. Here is Attorney General David Eby.
The real estate sector, in multiple chapters in this report, is identified as particularly vulnerable. Everything from how developers source their capital, the activities of real estate agents, the activities of accountants and lawyers, all related to the real estate sector. The commissioner was unable to conclude that money laundering is increasing the pricing of housing in our market right now, but he certainly does not reach the conclusion that it is not an issue. I'll say frankly that as a politician, I wouldn't be satisfied with a sash awarded by the commissioner that says not corrupt. I hold myself to a higher standard, and I look forward to seeing what explanations, if any, people who the commissioner has been critical of at the political level have to provide to British Columbians about why they failed at the job the British Columbians sent them to do.
My first guest is Peter German, the former head of the RCMP in Western Canada. He is the founder of the Vancouver Anti-Corruption Institute at the University of British Columbia. Peter German's Dirty Money reports in 2018 and 2019 for the BC government set the stage for the Cullen Commission.
It's an interesting recommendation to have an oversight czar or whatever you wish to call it. I think that's really innovative. I look forward to reading the bulk of the report where it describes, you know, the role and functions. But, you know, it sounds as if Justice Cullen is of the view that there should be an overarching strategy and someone to keep an eye on that overarching strategy. The creation of a separate unit, having a dedicated unit, I did recommend a dedicated unit for casinos, you may recall. And I also recommended that the current RCMP unit that was set up to deal with money laundering in the casinos continue. It's from what I'm reading in the report, Justice Cullen is recommending that CFSAU have a dedicated money laundering team. My understanding is that they already have the genesis of that dealing with casinos. So, yes, that could be a legacy, but the devil's in the details. And again, those details may be in the bulk of the report. I don't know. But the things you want to consider when starting a whole new unit is what about the others that are in this space, the RCMP, local police, and so forth. And number two, are we creating something brand new? Where do the resources come from? The people come from? Because there is obviously a gap in time from announcing the creation of a new unit to actually developing it. We're seeing that with the Surrey Police. It's already taken a couple of years and they're just starting to get off the ground. So it really depends on the details. It may well be a lasting legacy, but I'd definitely have to read more to know exactly what Justice Cullen is suggesting.
The whole argument of incompetence versus corruption. Will encourage a lot of public discourse.
And it all turns on that word corruption. I mean, what is corruption? You know, we talk about soft corruption, hard corruption, so forth. My sense is that Mr. Justice Cullen is saying that there is nothing that led him to believe that there is criminal corruption, which means bribery and the specific provisions of our criminal code that apply to corruption. Some people will say conflict of interest is a form of corruption, even though it doesn't lead to criminal charges and that sort of thing. So, yes, I can see people arguing that point, but I don't disagree that with his finding, if I'm correct in this, that there was no obvious corruption that would lead to criminal charges.
Now, you had a unique position in this whole equation. Of course, your reviews were the domino that led to the striking of the commission. You also were one of the witnesses, and again, also in a previous life, you also were head of the RCMP in Western Canada, and the RCMP does get some criticism from Commissioner Cullen. Talk about those aspects of how you fit into this.
With respect to the RCMP, and Mr. Justice Cullen talks about the RCMP having failed in terms of dealing with proceeds of crime and money laundering from at least 2012. Since at least 2012, I think is his phraseology. And I've also, as you will recall, been critical of the RCMP having dismantled the proceeds of crime unit. The Attorney General Eby and I did a few press conferences where the issue came up. My report, Dirty Money 2, is critical of the RCMP having dismantled the proceeds crime unit. I believe those were critical units, commercial crime as well, the drug squad. Those commodity-based squads were eliminated in 2013. I believe that's a mistake. I still believe it's a mistake. I don't disagree with his finding.
Commissioner Cullen made a special mention in the executive summary, in the findings, in the recommendations of your work, that your work has led to implementation of policies, procedures that have been effective in doing what they needed to do, which was reduce money laundering in casinos. How do you feel about that?
It's gratifying, to be honest with you, because it's been a long wait to see what the commission recommends. As I said earlier, I believe the report appears to be in running parallel to what my findings were. I think we saw the same things, although they had a lot more time and expertise at their disposal to inquire further than I did. But it's very gratifying because I think we did make a difference with that those interim recommendations. But I don't want to for a minute take full credit because the media has been in front of this story for a long time. People like yourself have been a credit to the journalism profession. So a lot of people contributed to the solution. Attorney General Eby was quick to pick up on my recommendation. So yes, gratified that we are at this point.
Do you think that this commission should have gone an extra year? Did it go as far as it could have?
Well, you know, the thing about commissions and inquiries is that they do take a long time and they do cost money. And that is a downside. Hopefully at the end of the day, you get good recommendations that are actionable and make a difference. Let's hope that's the case here. In terms of comparing this commission to Charbonneau, I agree with you. The approach taken was quite different. Charbonneau was really trying to put the bad guys on the witness stand and see where it took you and the suspects, et cetera. We didn't see that sort of approach here. It's much more of a civil litigation approach. So I would say, it was a different approach that Mr. Justice Cullen took, not necessarily better or worse, but a different approach to Charbonneau.
Regardless of the recommendations, regardless of any gaps in there, it has at least brought this to public consciousness and to allow people like you to take it a step further.
As you know, the Vancouver model came up a lot during the last few years. It was a phrase coined by a professor in Australia, John Langdale, looking at what was taking place in our casinos and the movement of money from China. So what we have really said, I'm the president of the International Center for Criminal Law Reform at the law school at UBC, and we said, well, why don't we turn that around and create an anti-corruption institute and call it the Vancouver Anti-Corruption Institute and really attempt to do good things with respect to this fight against corruption and money laundering. And that's what we are attempting to do. We created the VASHI, as we call it, on anti-corruption, International Anti-Corruption Day, December 9th of last year. And we're starting to put it together and hope to make a difference for Vancouver internationally and domestically.
That was Peter German. Now, my guest, Cash Heed, a BC Liberal politician from 2009 to 2013, including time as the Solicitor General of British Columbia. Cash Heed came into government after a career in policing. He was deputy chief of the Vancouver Police and chief of the West Vancouver Police. Cash, what is your initial reaction to the final report?
I was a little surprised, and I thought it was just some surface material that he came up with respect to what was going on. This took 3 years. And Bob, you'll recall, I think you and I had a discussion several years ago with respect to what we should do around some of the problems with casinos and with money laundering in those casinos. We talked about the fact that we should maybe look at a judicial review. This is something that could be addressed in a short period of time. It is something that, in my opinion, has a significant amount of, if I can use the term, teeth to actually deal with the situation. You could implement some of the recommendations from the judicial review rather quickly, rather than having to go through a lengthy public inquiry and an inquiry where, under the Inquiries Act in British Columbia, it's not incumbent upon the government to actually accept and implement those recommendations. Matter of fact, it's at the behest of the government whether they want to accept the recommendations and implement one or all 101 of Collins' recommendations.
The word was, elected officials were aware of suspicious funds entering the provincial revenue stream through the gaming industry, but there is no evidence of corruption. That seems a little far-fetched to me, especially since they were getting a lot of donations from the casino companies, and they were very happy to see the profits of BC Lottery Corporation. All evidence is that they turned a blind eye to this, but Cullen says no corruption.
Whether you want to classify it as willful blindness or not, the important thing to remember here, a lot of those elected officials take their information from the bureaucrats. And this is the part that really bothers me. If you've had so many different enforcement agencies, whether it's GPEB, CFSU, or even the local law enforcement or the FSOC of the RCMP looking at these particular matters, you would think they would advise the bureaucracy, who would advise the politicians with respect to what was going on. And it, at that point, it's incumbent upon the politicians to do something about that, or at least make an inquiry into it. Whether it was just a lack of desire or lack of knowledge or a bit of both on why there was no significant action taken, or did those enforcement officials feel this was a significant issue? Bob, you got to remember, when we looked at this issue and it came to the forefront in around 2015, and people started raising some of the concerns, and we saw the videos of these bag full of monies coming into the casino. Those were visuals. But if you look at the amount of money that is actually laundered in this country and elsewhere around the world, it is incredible the amount that is actually laundered. When you look at the casinos, and I call this out, is this is easy pickings for enforcement officials. These are what I would call the low-hanging fruit, if not the fruit that's already fallen to the ground. When you look at the bulk of the laundering of money, illicit proceeds, it's through other venues, whether you want to look at the real estate or whether you want to look at the stock market. The casinos is actually the very, very small tip of, we can use the metaphor, the iceberg of money laundering in Canada and internationally.
Now, the two key recommendations for action that Cullen had are the creation of an anti-money laundering commissioner and a dedicated provincial money laundering intelligence and investigation unit, which are great ideas on paper. We don't know if the NDP is going to go ahead with those and actually turn those into reality. One is easier than another. Hiring a commissioner is rather simple, but to actually strike a force, an intelligence and investigation unit, even though there are elements of that elsewhere, in Jigit, for instance, do you think that these are the ways on a long-term basis to get a handle on the problem?
No, and I'm going to tell you why. It's just creating more bureaucracy. When you look at the fact that, what are we going to have, a commissioner now? We're going to have a commissioner for all of these issues that come to the forefront. We're going to have a commissioner for gang problems. We're going to have a commissioner for drug overdoses and all that. No, you don't create an independent officer to the legislature for something like this. You ensure that your enforcement agencies that you currently have that are resourced are actually held accountable to deal with the situation around money laundering. You have to look at the federal responsibility. There has to be pressure, more pressure put on the federal government, more pressure put on CRA, more pressure to make FINTRAC an actual agency that has the ability to deal with money laundering problems. Looking at the federal resources of the RCMP to ensure that they're actually on that. That is a better resource for dealing with this particular problem. When you go and create more bureaucracies, first of all, I'm not for putting a commissioner as an independent officer of the legislature. I am not for creating another unit. Secondly, where for the other unit are you going to get the resources from? When you look at the fact that 30% of our police agencies just here in British Columbia are carrying vacancies right now, and they do not have a large pool of candidates that want to be police officers. Now you're looking at creating an expertise or taking the expertise from some of the other enforcement units, from some of the other agencies, whether it's dedicated prosecutors, whether it's accountants, whether it's some other type of legal entity, and put it in a particular unit. I feel that you're creating more bureaucracy. You're not actually using the resources that you have to deal with this particular problem. We're going to have more of what we had with IPOC, where it just became so expensive to try and deal with the situation for criminal proceeds of crime. We had it with the IMET, Integrated Market Enforcement Team. You're now going to create another entity, and it's going to go through the same cycle that all of these agencies that became ineffective at the end because they were so cost prohibitive to try and deal with this problem.
There are a lot of gaps here. They didn't go to the logical conclusion. They really did focus on the casinos too much. What are your thoughts on this, comparing the Cullen Commission to the Charbonneau Commission?
The Inquiries Act in Quebec is much more enforcement-oriented than we have here in British Columbia. Ours is probably one of the weakest Inquiries Act in all of Canada that we have here. Again, as I mentioned earlier, there's nothing that ensures that the government actually implements the recommendations or follows through on the recommendations. We've seen that. The ones that I'm more familiar with are Jakansky. Not all the recommendations were put forward there. When we looked at the Missing Women's Inquiry, not all the recommendations have been put forward there. We just had a legislative committee on police reforms. We don't even know if that report was accepted in the recommendations by government. Now you have this. I don't expect a significant amount of those 101 recommendations put forward. The second part is there's no enforcement angle at all in the Inquiries Act here. Certainly any evidence that may have been garnished from the Cullen Commission is out there in the public view, and anything they may have garnished elsewhere could be provided to some type of enforcement agency to deal with it. But really, there's no requirement under the Inquiries Act for any of that, or there's no powers given to the commissioner for any of that. Where we go on this, and it's very interesting, you bring up some important things on those areas that there is an incredible amount of money laundering in Canada, such as the stock market, such as the real estate industry here. If you look at that, it didn't even register to a significant degree with the Cullen Commission. If you look at what Cullen said, is the fact that, you know, the affordability problem of houses wasn't a result of money laundering. So I'm not sure what is going on there, because we were led to believe these other areas are significant, as you gave an examples of a recent stock manipulation by some of the Canadians that are involved in this type of behavior. And I was well aware of other examples where, in fact, a significant amount of money laundering goes on in the stock market. But when you look at the real estate thing, I'm hoping that this will be the number one job if we come up with this so-called money laundering czar, that he or she will actually focus on those areas where there's so much money being laundered, that he or she will actually do their own probe into the real estate industry, into the stock market, so we can really get at the money laundering problem, because this is just surface work, unfortunately, by Commissioner Cullen. And, you know, I do respect the individual, but I'll tell you, I'm not disappointed, but I'm not surprised with really what has come out of it. I think there's a lot more work that has to be done. And how we do that remains to be seen.
That was Cash Heed. What do you think? Email bob@thebreaker.news.
Now it's time on thebreaker.news. news podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In the Taiwan news, Foxconn building first battery cell plant in South Taiwan. The company plans to build a battery supply chain ecosystem in Kaohsiung that includes materials, battery cells, and battery packs. The batteries manufactured will initially be used in electric buses, electric vehicles, and energy storage systems in Taiwan. In the Hong Kong Free Press, Hong Kong bars multiple media outlets from inauguration of John Lee and July 1st celebrations. Japan's Nikkei, Asahi Shimbun, and Kyoto News, Taiwan's CTV, Getty Images in the U.S., Europe's EPA, as well as Hong Kong's InMedia, PSHK, TMHK, and HKFP are among those barred. Chinese leader Xi Jinping is rumored to be attending the festivities, with hotels around Wan Chai's exhibition center booked out by the government. The Hong Kong Journalists Association said in a statement on Thursday that it was, quote, deeply concerned. In Mainichi News, A-bombs continue to ruin your body. Hiroshima survivor calls for nuclear abolition. Masahi Iishima, an 80-year-old survivor, has little recollection of the 1945 bombing, as he was just 3 years old at the time, but the cancer he later developed is telltale evidence of radioactive scars left on him. After retiring at age 65, Iishima started devoting himself to activities as an A-bomb survivor. 6 years ago, he was diagnosed with thyroid cancer during a regular checkup. He soon had the tumor removed and has since had no metastatic cancer. His cancer was recognized as an A-bomb-related illness. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Daily Astorian, on the North Coast, a fisherman makes a rare find. Timbers are now believed to belong to the wreck of Santo Cristo de Burgos, a Spanish galleon also known as the beeswax for the valuable wax that formed part of its cargo. Built in the Philippines, the ship left Manila in 1693, loaded with fine Asian trade goods and likely wrecked on Nehalem Spit after a journey across the Pacific. Almost nothing is known about the fate of the people aboard. Oral traditions among tribes suggest there was some contact with survivors. A tsunami that struck in 1700 further scattered the wreckage. In King 5, how Washington is leading the way for electric boats in the U.S. Pure Watercraft, which is headquartered on the shore of Lake Union, created an outboard motor and built a pontoon boat that is completely electric. The company launched in 2011 and announced a deal with General Motors last winter. The deal is a $150 million investment for a 25% stake in Pure Watercraft. Pure Watercraft is building a facility in Tukwila to manufacture pontoon boats and outboard motors. The boats are powered by Pure Watercraft's outboard motor and have a battery pack supplied by General Motors. In the Times Colonist, to catch a can by kayak, Victoria couple tackles epic race to Alaska. For the next 3 weeks and possibly longer, Ian Graham and Janice Mason will be working together in a double kayak. They're competing in the Race to Alaska, billed as the longest human or wind-powered race in North America for the fifth and fourth time respectively, and are relishing the challenge of paddling the 1,207 kilometers from Port Townsend, Washington to the southern coast of Alaska. Good luck and Godspeed. That is Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
It don't matter what color you are, 'cause love will conquer hate.
Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to St. John Ambulance, the first name in first aid. It's St. John Ambulance Week in BC until June 25th. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca.
Cacha Kozat Korona.
That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of June 19th, 2022. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 19th of June in 1846, the first official organized baseball game? New York Baseball Club beat the Knickerbockers on Elysian Fields in Hoboken 23-1. Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to Bob at thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.